New York Times bestselling author Greg Braden is internationally renowned as a pioneer in bridging science and spirituality. Following a successful career as a computer geologist for Phillips Petroleum during the 1970s energy crisis, he worked as a senior computer systems designer with Martin Marietta Defense Systems during the last years of the Cold War. In 1991, he became the first technical operations manager for the Cisco Systems, where he led the development of the global support team that maintained the early Internet. For more than 20 years, Greg has searched high mountaintop villages, remote monasteries, and forgotten texts to uncover the timeless secrets. To date, his work has led to such paradigm-shattering books as The Isaiah Effect, The God Code, The Divine Matrix, and his newest, Fractal Time, The Secret of 2012 and the New World Age, which debuted at the number 5 of the New York Times best-selling list just 2 weeks after its release. Documentaries featuring his work are now showing on the Discovery Channel, Sci-Fi, the History Channel, and NBC. Today, Greg's work is published in 17 languages in 33 countries, and shows beyond any reasonable doubt that the key to the future lies in the wisdom of our past. Please welcome Greg Braden.
Good afternoon. Didn't you do a great job? Thank you, Mona. Wow. Well, first, I want to begin. I didn't know we were going to have live music, and it felt kind of like a spiritual nightclub to me. Kind of feel that way to you? I mean, a new thought, new world spiritual nightclub. So I don't know where is Barry? Barry and Sean, I want to thank you both for, this is what I want to thank them for. I want to thank you both for the work you do in the world. I want to thank you for the effort you made to bring some beautiful music into this room. I want to thank you for being just really balanced male energy. You've got beautiful hearts, brilliant minds. It comes forth in your music, and I'm honored to be in this room and very much appreciate you doing what you've done for us today. So thank you very much. And I am honored to have my beautiful brother, Dr. Bruce Lipton, is sitting on the front row. He just did the program, and he's going to come to my program. Bruce, I'm going to say the same thing. You may or may not know this. Bruce has just come back from Tokyo. They made a quick trip to Tokyo and back to receive the Goya Peace Award. Just if you haven't heard that, last year, Bill Gates, I think, was the one who received it last year for his work in the biology of belief, the science of epigenetics, the truth and the power that tells us beyond any reasonable doubt that we are limited only by what we claim in our hearts in this world, not the bodies that we're born into when we come into this world. So, Bruce, I want to thank you for the work that you do. I want to thank you for your support, and it's an honor to be in this room and share this world with you. Thank you so much. I want to thank Mishka Productions. I don't know if any of Mishka people are in the room, but they'll listen to this tape. Are we taping, by the way? We are, aren't we? It's being taped. So they'll listen to this tape later. You know, there were a lot of reasons for them not to do this program this year, and I know that you all know the economy isn't what it's been in years past, and there were some roadblocks earlier in the year. They went forward with this program anyway, and I want to thank them for their vision and their dedication and their perseverance and willingness to bring us together, and I want to thank you all for supporting the program and being here, because this is no ordinary time in the history of the planet. This is no ordinary year in the history of our civilization. That means this can be no ordinary conference, and that's why I'm really happy to be with you in this room today. So thank you all for being in this room. Absolutely. And I'm going to thank our AV tech. Can I get a little bit more on this, please? A little hotter. Are you having a good conference? Are you as happy to be here as I am to be here? We have a really, really very big afternoon that I'm going to share with you. And I'm especially honored to be here today because the big movie, 2012, came out last night. Has anybody seen the movie yet? I haven't seen it either. I'm looking forward to seeing it. I think it's going to be pretty interesting. You've seen the trailers, right? How many of you feel like something big is happening? Not that it's going to happen. How many feel like something big is happening in this world right now? You feel that? I feel it as well. And it's not just an American phenomenon. I've worked with Bruce more in other countries than I have in this country. Bruce and I and other authors, we've all found that as we leave the borders of America, the rest of the world is way on board with the changes going on in this world. And not necessarily people in this room, but we as Americans tend to be more focused on things that are happening right in our own backyard, politics, economy, and maybe missing the context. And again, I'm not saying it's you in this room, but at large. But when we leave the borders of this country, I got to tell you, the rest of the world is way on board with a big change happening on this planet right now. And the rest of the world, much of the rest of the world, is looking to this part of the world for guidance and leadership. And I think it's important because we're learning and remembering that we are a family together, working as a family to go through whatever changes are happening. So you all just told me now you feel like something big's happening in the world. I'm just going to ask some questions. I want to find out who's in the room. How many in this room, I'm sure nobody in this room is having this right now, but I'm just going to ask. Anybody going through any big personal stuff? Big personal relationship changes, economic changes, health challenges, anything like that? Anybody? Most people in the room? Okay, don't be shy. Who's going through something? Just show me. Show me hands. Okay, well, most of you have just said to me, you feel like something big is happening in the world, and most of you have just raised your hand and said something big is happening in your lives. Now, let me ask you this question. Maybe you've thought about this. Is it possible that those two things are related? Could the big stuff happening in the world on this planet right now be triggering the changes that we're all experiencing in our lives? You think that's possible? Do you? I think there's a really good chance that's exactly what's happening. This is where we're going to go with this today. We are going through a rare, precious, pivotal moment in the history of this planet. I'm going to begin with some facts. If you're like me, you'd like to know where we're going with this program. We're going to begin talking about cycles of time and the way they influence our lives. Fact that I'll begin with is it is a fact that we are living a rare and mysterious ending of a cycle of time that began 5,125 years ago. Now, what that means, we don't know for certain. We're going to get into that today, but it is a fact we are living the last years of that cycle. That's a fact. It is a fact that the indigenous peoples of this world, throughout the world, have known that this time of great change was coming. And they've known because it always does. Every 5,125 years or so, for reasons that we're going to see in just a moment for our scientific left-brain minds, our world does go through a big change, and our ancestors documented those changes. They said we've been through at least four, possibly five, such changes that they now have recorded. That is a fact. And it is a fact that every 5,125 years or so, when we go through these changes, they have what have been perceived as catastrophic effects upon the planet. I think we're about to change all that right now. We are going through some big changes on this planet, but we're dealing with them differently than we have in the past. Now, why the changes are happening, what it means to us, that's what I want to talk about in here today. If you've seen the preview, the trailer for this movie 2012, what they're saying is it looks like most of the world is destroyed and most of the people on the earth are destroyed. I have done a number of documentaries that are exploring this now. The networks caught on to the 2012 phenomenon early in this year. They knew the movie was coming out in November. This was released last night. Last night was Friday, right? Yeah. It was released last night. So the networks began creating programming that they could offer at no charge on the cable stations and on the mainstream stations, while the movie theaters are offering this very frightening scenario that people have to pay to go see. And I have to really hand it to the networks. For the most part, I think they're doing a pretty good job. NBC, I interviewed with NBC and ABC both earlier this year. NBC aired one of their specials late last week. They had some very well-credentialed technical people that said flat out this could be the end of civilization and humankind as we know it. They showed people buying bunkers and putting them underground and living in old missile silos from the Cold War in Nebraska and Kansas, if you saw any of those specials. And you had other people that said there's no reason for us to think that way. There's no reason for us to live in that kind of fear. I want to share with you, the reason I'm so passionate about what we're going to do in here today is this. Our own scientists are telling us that to a large extent, the images that we surround ourselves with of our world today tend to become the reality that we experience in the near term. If we are surrounding ourselves with the expectation, the anticipation of this frightening scenario that so many people are looking at right now, are we in fact creating something that we really don't want to experience? It's really, really important, and this is why I so honor and love Bruce's work and some of the other people that are here this weekend. It's really important for us to create positive alternative images of our near-term future, as well as looking at those frightening scenarios for the reasons that I've just explained. How many of you feel like the end of the world is a few years away? Do you feel that? I want to tell you, there's nothing in the indigenous prophecies or traditions that say that Earth ends in 3 years. There are interpretations, religious interpretations, and interpretations from prophets who have suggested that, but it's not in the indigenous traditions. What they do say, and we're going to explore some of these here in just a few moments, what they do say is that the world that we have known can no longer exist in the presence of the changes, and a new world must be born. But that's not the end of the planet. And I think that you and I are witnessing this right now. We are watching the result of 5,000 years of civilization and systems that have been built to support us in this world. We're watching them go through a change, and the systems that are no longer sustainable, they can't hold up under the stress of the change. They're collapsing, and new systems are being born. This is what's so amazing. There has to be a generation that lives that change, that remembers everything the way it used to be, and is birthing all that is yet to be. Isn't that an amazing thing to think about? I had this conversation with, I watched the History Channel with my mom the night before I left, Thursday night, to come here. And mom has all these things she wants us to do together. And she keeps saying, you know, I want to do some traveling. I want you to help me with this and this in the yard and all these things. She said, but let's wait till things settle down. She said, there's too much going on. Let's wait till things get back to normal. And I said, well, Mom, what's normal? And she said, you know, the way things used to be 8, maybe 10 years ago. I said, Mom, I think this is normal. This is the new norm. And if you think you're waiting for things to settle down in the future, I think this is the settle down right now, because my sense is we are in for a big ride in about the next 24 months, 18 to 24 months. And I'll show you why I'm saying this. If you have to leave before I finish this program, please don't everybody leave all at once, because you will light up every one of my abandonment issues. And then there's a whole different workshop that I'll go into. But if for some reason you need to get up and leave, I want you to know where I'm going with this. I was trained as a scientist, and nothing in my scientific training prepared me for what's happening in the world today or for what I'm about to share with you. It did prepare me for a way to look into the past to arrive at the understandings I'm going to share with you. That is based in science. There is no scientific evidence to suggest that Earth is going to end. There is a lot of scientific evidence to suggest that Earth is undergoing a compressed, intense, rapid, short-term change. Doesn't last forever. But this is where it gets really interesting. If you know where to look in the past, you know what to expect from the times that Earth has gone through these changes before. And here's what I can tell you, and this is why today is so important. Some of the greatest civilizations of our past, highly advanced, technologically advanced civilizations of our past, they collapsed and disappeared when they reached the point in their cycle where we are in ours right now, because they made a mistake that you and I can avoid. That's why this is so important. The mistake is this. Those civilizations, they saw their world changing and they didn't understand what the change was all about. And in their fear, they began to fight one another to gain control of the last vestiges of the resources that were disappearing in a way of life they couldn't hang on to. And when they fought one another, everybody lost. There are other civilizations that chose to cooperate and work together, and they sustained themselves, and their remnants are with us today. So the question is this: are we making the same mistake as the civilizations of the past? Are we fighting one another at a time when we should actually be working together as a family that we are on this planet? I'm going to give you some really good reasons to help to understand what that's all about. That's why I think this is such an important day today. We're going to talk about cycles of time and life. What can we realistically expect over the next couple of years? It doesn't do any good to talk about what to expect if we don't know what to do. What can we do to help ease this shift and the transition? It's going to happen no matter what. It's how we define this shift and transition, how we treat one another, how we treat ourselves. Then the brochure for Celebrate Your Life said, we're going to change your life, so I had to put that up there. And after we change your life, at the very bottom, it said much, much more. So after we change your life, we'll do even more. And that's where we're going to go with this. I am not going to speak about any books specifically, but I want you to know where some of this information comes from. It is implied that there is a universal field of energy that connects all things in this world. If you'd like to know more about that, the book The Divine Matrix is the book that describes the science of what that field is all about. Almost universally, ancient indigenous traditions remind us that we are born speaking the language that communicates with the field that holds everything together. The unspoken language, the nonverbal language of the human heart. And if you're interested in more about that, The Spontaneous Healing of Belief is the book that you'd want to see. The most recent book, Fractal Time, is about the cycles of time we're going to talk about today and why now, perhaps more than any other time in the history of this civilization, our choices are more potent than ever if we understand the language that the field recognizes to help us make those choices. So those are the three things I'll be referencing today. The experts are pretty much in agreement. We are living in a world in crisis. This is the term they use. I kind of like the word crisis because it means that something is calling our attention to a situation or a condition, but it also means it's not over yet. It's just a crisis. We can still do something about it. So I tend to think of this as a time, I like this term, a time of graceful urgency. Don't you like that? It means we got all the time we need to do whatever we're going to do, but now's the time to do it. You don't want to wait another minute. That's the urgency part. Graceful means this is the time to make the changes in our lives, and this is where we are today. Now we're making these decisions right now. It's not a month from now. It's not 6 months from now. You and I have got to make some decisions. We've got to make them personally. We've got to make them collectively, and I'm going to identify how we know what those decisions are all about and how to do this. The experts are telling us this is a time of crisis, and they're identifying it as a time of extremes. And we don't have to spend a lot of time on this. You know that we're living extremes in climate, extremes in weather. We're seeing diseases we've never seen before. 30 new diseases have cropped up in the last 25 years alone that we have no known medical cure for. In the last 25 years. We're seeing a food shortage all over the world. And if you doubt that there's a food shortage, if you don't do your own grocery shopping, ask the person that does it for you to check into this. Have you looked at to see where our produce comes from lately? It's interesting. We do have food in our supermarket. A lot of that food doesn't come from this country anymore because we're not able to grow the food the way that we have in the past for a lot of reasons. There is a food crisis that's going on in the world. The experts talk about the growing number of conflicts that are cropping up all over the world. And these are very, very different than the wars of the past. These aren't so much about borders. They're about ideas. And they say, how do we win a battle of ideas? And how these conflicts are merging into regional conditions, nuclear proliferation. I know you all know that this is happening right now in a way we haven't seen since right after World War II and the Cold War. And the experts are saying, on top of all that, the global economic collapse is fueling many of these conditions. So the experts are looking at these as isolated situations that all happen to be occurring at the same period of time. Isn't that interesting? So many different things are happening at the same period of time. Global extremes that are leading to human extremes that ultimately are leading to personal extremes. When the world changes, we must change. We are changed as individuals in the presence of these global changes. So one of the things I ask myself, I was trained as a scientist, and I like to know, my man brain likes to know why. Maybe you're like I am. I like to go way out into the cosmos. I want to look at the big cosmic picture of how everything in the universe works. And then I like to zero right in on the nanosecond of my life right now and see how the choices of my life fit into that big picture. Any of you like that? Yeah, I didn't think so. Well, doesn't it help to know why things are the way they are? So my question is, why are all of these extremes happening in this compressed period of time? Why now? Have you ever wondered about that? Well, before I can go to the next slide, I need you to ask me a question. So, well, say, Greg, why are these things happening now? See, it'll be fun on the audio when you listen to it later. I'm really glad you asked, because now I can go to my next slide. It's all about cycles of time. We in the West have tended, in the last 300 years, to separate ourselves from the rhythms and the cycles of nature and the universe. And this is what's different about the way we look at our lives in our world and the way our indigenous ancestors looked at their lives in the world. Cycles of time. I'm going to share some facts with you. How many are taking notes? Any note takers in here? Oh, you'll have fun. Okay. Right. New discovery number one. New discovery number one. This is a scientific fact. It is a fact that the center of our Milky Way galaxy is a powerful source of energy. It's a magnetic field, if you want to be specific, that has a powerful, profound effect upon life here on Earth. That now is a scientific fact. Among the many articles, peer-reviewed journals that are talking about this, the very prestigious journal Nature, volume 434, October 2004. I'm saying this into the mic so you have it on the recording. Now you say, well, what's the big deal? We've always intuited this. Well, we've intuited it, but this is the first time scientists are telling us it is a fact. This powerful source of energy. The ancients call it the Great Central Sun. If you've ever heard of the Great Central Sun, this is what they were talking about. So there's a very powerful field of energy that affects the way we live our lives here on Earth. That's the first discovery. The second discovery is all about location. Location, location, location. Where we are in our orbit around that field of energy determines how we are influenced. Now, this is our Milky Way galaxy, a diagram of our Milky Way galaxy. And this is, the laser's not working very well here, but the yellow orbit is our orbit around that source of energy. It's not a circle, it's an ellipse. So that means sometimes there are places in the orbit where we're closer to that field of energy. Sometimes there are places in that orbit where we're further away. Can you see that? Can you see why that would be? Okay, so where we are determines how we are influenced, and this is where it gets really interesting. That location changes on a regular basis, covering vast cycles of time. This is documented in the very prestigious journal Nature in different series of articles, such as the ones, volume 441, May 2006, if you're interested in looking these kinds of things up. Now, this is interesting because somehow our ancestors knew this before our satellites and our GPS and our computers verified it in the 20th century. Our ancestors knew that on a cyclic basis, life on this planet changes because of these orbits. But scientists discounted it until very recently, within the last 10 years or so. Isn't that interesting? Science is just now catching up, in some respects, to the wisdom of our indigenous ancestors. Ancient civilizations, they understood the cycles, but they also warned us of what those changes would be. And they also left information for us that would help us personally get through the changes, to help us personally navigate the changes in our lives. So I think I was putting this together, 90 minutes really isn't that long to have this conversation, and I felt like one of the most empowering things that I could share with you today is to help you understand what causes the cycles. Because if you know this, It's not just me telling you, but if you really understand what causes the cycles, then no matter what happens, no matter what documentary you see, no matter what frightening news program you see or what conversation you have with someone, you can think back to this moment and you'll know where that information fits. So are you okay if we do this for a minute? I want you to see what it is that causes these cycles. Right now, the theory is this, and it is a theory because there's no better explanation right now, that Earth is being pulled in by two different forces. The moon, that's that little blue dot up to the upper right, that's Earth. I'm sorry, that's the moon. The gravity of the moon is pulling Earth one way. The gravity of the sun is pulling Earth the other direction. And you say, well, the moon's really small. And I say, yeah, it is, but it's way close. The sun is really big, but it's further away. Okay, so every 24 hours, Earth rotates, creating night and day. It spins on its axis. But because it's being pulled in two different directions, that spin becomes a wobble. Does that make sense? Here's what I mean by that. Here's a little schematic. Here is Earth. It wants to spin to create night and day, but because it's being pulled in two different directions, the theory says that spin becomes a wobble. But the wobble happens over a very long period of time. One wobble takes about 26,000 years. You and I weren't here to see the last wobble, the end of the last wobble. One wobble takes about 26,000 years. Does that number sound familiar to anyone? 26,000 years. If you are an astrologer, that is a period of time that is called the precession of the equinoxes. Or if you've never heard of that before, that is the period of time it takes Earth to go through all the zodiac signs, the age of Pisces, the age of Aquarius, the age of Aries, the age of Cancer. When you go through all of those different ages, you've done one complete wobble, 26,000 years. Now, this is really interesting. You all know about fractals? You know what fractals are? A fractal, the best way to describe a fractal, remember how much you loved science when you were in school? And you loved your science book, see? If you're like me, one of my favorite pages in my science book was a page that had a picture of an atom. Because it was one of the few color pages. Bruce, your color page was on the periodic table of elements in your science book, because we've talked about this. My only color picture in my science book was the atom, so I turned to it all the time. And I remember looking at the atom, and I thought, you know, except for the size, that atom looks a whole lot like a solar system, except it's tiny. You remember ever thinking about like that? And I said, if you take it one step further, the solar system, except for the size, looks a whole lot like a Milky Way galaxy, except it's smaller. The idea is that it's the same pattern on different scales. We say the atom is a fractal of the solar system, or the solar system is a fractal of the galaxy. Same pattern, same principles, but a different scale. Does that make sense? Okay, so this is important because this 26,000 years, this is really, really interesting. Do you know approximately how many days does the gestation of a human embryo take in the womb of its mother? About 260 days. 260 days is a fractal of 26,000 years. Here's why that's interesting. The Mayans who are talking to us about this change, the Mayans say that just the way 260 days is the length of time that we mature in the womb of our mother before we're born, 26,000 years is the way we mature on this planet before we are born into a new way of being. And this is what Bruce is talking about in his cellular biology, is the cells are emerging into a new kind of community. So I think it's interesting that the 26,000-year cycle is exactly a fractal of how long we mature inside the womb of our mother. And the Mayans are telling us in no uncertain terms that we are emerging into a new way of being in this world. So 26,000 years is how long this takes. That one wobble, it's called the precession of the equinoxes. Now, what I want to do is, if you can work with me, this is our Milky Way. And what I'd like to do, I want an edge view of our Milky Way galaxy. So if you kind of work with me on this, if we can kind of imagine that and then imagine that. So we're looking at the edge of the Milky Way. Does that work for you? So you kind of see that? Well, if it does, this is an image of the actual Milky Way. This is what it looks like on a cloudless night at the equator. When we look through that bright band of stars that runs over our head at night. And when you're looking up through the edge of our Milky Way galaxy, there's a place where you can draw a line that pretty much separates the top from the bottom. It's called the equator of the Milky Way, just kind of like the equator of the Earth separates the upper and the lower hemispheres. So if you can imagine in your mind's eye, or we can just use the screen, this equator. And if we can imagine when we look at our planet doing this 26,000-year wobble, the equator of the Earth, where the equator of the Earth is relative to the equator of our Milky Way. Does that make sense if I say that? This is the most technical thing we'll do. Then we're going to look at some pictures. Okay, so if I say that, does that make sense? Here's a little diagram that will help. Here is Earth. And what you're seeing is the equator has been extended out on all sides. So you can see as Earth goes through this 26,000-year wobble, every once in a while something happens. Not there, not there, not there, not there, right there. See that? Not there, not there, not there, right there. Can you see that? Can you see where the equator, imaginary line of the Earth lines up with the imaginary line of the Milky Way? Can you all see where that is? Can you? Yes, no? Does it make sense? Okay. If you can see that, that is the December 21st, 2012 alignment. When that happens, this is the alignment we've all been waiting for. When this happens, the orientation of Earth in the heavens relative to that Milky Way galaxy, when this happens on December 21st of 2012, it makes it look like our sun emerges from the middle of the Milky Way in a very precise place that the Mayans talked about, and it aligns us with that powerful source of energy at the center of our Milky Way galaxy. This is the alignment that everybody's talking about. Does that help to understand what this is all about? Okay, if it does, whoops. This is not my normal clicker. That's why I'm looking at it. When I came in here today, they said, you have to use somebody else's clicker. So I'm using somebody else's clicker. Okay, so if that makes sense, one of those 26,000-year wobbles, that's a long time. I mean, very few people are alive at the end of the cycle that begin. I'm not saying none. There always could be exceptions, but maybe in this room, I don't know. But that's a long time. One wobble is divided into five segments of time that are probably more familiar to you that are called great world ages. Okay? Each world age is about 5,000 years long. Now, this is interesting because everybody's talking about the end of this cycle, this 5,000-year cycle we're in right now. When did our cycle begin? 5,000 years ago. That's the biblical era, about 3114 B.C., We tend to think that civilization and the world began 5,000 years ago, but what we're finding is that that's really the time this cycle began. What happened before that? And what happened before that? And this is where the archaeologists and the geologists and the historians are having a great time, because new archaeological sites now are being revealed in Egypt, in India, in Pakistan, in South America. We're looking at 10,000-year-old civilization, 12,000 and 15,000-year-old civilization. And you say, how can that be? Because everything's only 5,000 years old. Well, 5,000 years is only this cycle. These are previous cycles. So we are also redefining who we are and how long we've been here in this world as well. All right, so one wobble is divided into five ages. Each age is about a little over 5,000 years long. Now, this is why today is important, and then we're going to go into the significance of what it means. We are now at a place we're ending the last world age of the present cycle. So we're ending a 5,000-year cycle, but it is also the fifth 5,000-year cycle that brings us to the end of the big wobble as well. Does that make sense? Okay. So, where we are right now, the present world age, began August 11th. This is on the Mayan calendar is what we're looking at. Longer programs, we talk in more detail about how that calendar works. But in 1928, the calendar was believed to be translated. These are the dates. The present world age began August 11th, 3114 BC. This is the biblical age. Now, here's your first test. When does it end? When does the world age end? When in 2012? Okay, I just want to see if you're watching. Exactly. It ends with a rare astronomical alignment. December 21st of the year 2012 is when that wobble brings us back to the place we were 26,000 years ago. And that alignment, that direct access to that powerful source of energy at the Milky Way galaxy. Now, does that make sense? You okay with all that? This is where this is so interesting. We're talking about planets and galaxies and solar systems, huge systems in the universe that move slowly over long periods of time. This thing doesn't happen in a heartbeat. It doesn't happen in a day. It doesn't happen in an hour. It happens slowly over long periods of time. What the scientists, the mathematicians tell us is that we are in what's called the 2012 zone of alignment, and that zone began right around 1980 and it ends in 2016. 2012 is the precise alignment, but we're already well into the zone. We're already halfway through that zone. What that tells you and tells me is that we are over halfway through the kinds of changes that we can expect in that alignment. And I think we're doing pretty good. What do you think? There are big things happening in the world. And I'm not saying it's a bed of roses. We're already living the most frightening of the prophecies that you see from the interpretations, the biblical prophecies from Edgar Cayce, from Nostradamus, from Gene Dixon, from the papal prophecies. We're already seeing multiple fires raging out of control on multiple continents. We're already seeing sea levels rising. We're seeing communities being wiped off of shoreside communities. We're already seeing them disappear. We're already seeing disease that has no medical cure, killing millions of people on different continents. We're already seeing those things happen. We're seeing extremes in climate and weather and food shortage and war. All those are the things in the prophecies. We're already seeing them. But there's a lot of good things happening, aren't there? There's a lot of good things happening at the same time. I'm going to caution you to be careful of how people interpret those prophecies because it's very subjective. And every one of the prophets, if you look closely, Edgar Cayce, Nostradamus, the Mayans, Gene Dixon, they all said that those frightening things are not the only thing happening, and that's not all that has to happen. A lot of good things happening. And the ultimate outcome of this rare, precious moment in time is being determined by who? By those who are living the cycle. Nobody knows what's going to happen because we are choosing the outcome right now. That's why this is so... Let me just ask, how many people in this room, I'm just going to look at some people here. If I look at you, don't feel like I'm singling you out. Okay, I don't know everybody in this room. I know a lot of people in this room. If you're in this room, except Bruce, I know this doesn't apply to you. If you're in this room, I would be willing to bet that you are the person. Yeah, you're the ones. You're the person in your family or your workplace or your circle of friends that everybody's always looked at as being a little out there. Am I right? A little odd? Am I? It's not a bad thing, but are you that person? Because you look at things differently, right? You look beyond the obvious. You always look a little deeper. You're the one they come to. Wacko. Pardon me? Who's wacko? No, I wouldn't say wacko. You just look at things differently. You're the one they come to when the world that they have come to accept crumbles at their ankles and they don't know what happened. You're the one that when... Someone, you know, I had this happen to a friend of mine, ran 10 miles to work every morning, showered, went through his work day, ran 10 miles home every night, so 20 miles a day, ate all the right foods, drank all the right concoctions, all the right mushroom drink fermenting on the second row of the refrigerator shelf, wore all the right tourmalines with all the right colors over all the right chakras. And he went to have a physical when he was in his late 40s, and the doctor said, there's something in your body that shouldn't be there. It needs to come out. And he said, well, how can that be? I do all the right things. You're the person they would go to ask when their perfect health disappears. Their perfect marriage is on the rocks. They don't understand why. Because you look at things a little differently. Okay? How many of you have always felt like you were preparing or training for something in your world? You feel like you were getting ready for something? I remember I asked my mom when I was 5 years old. I said, then what year does the world end? That's the way a five-year-old thinks about it. Mom said, go ask your dad. Okay. So there's this sense. If we all wait for the bad things to happen, that's too late to figure out a new way to live. But that'll never happen because you all are already looking at the world differently. You're building new ways of sustaining yourselves, new ways we are. This is what this community is all about. That's the value of being at this conference this weekend. It's a point of reference. You find a way of being. You find confirmation in beliefs so that when you leave here, you don't have to go home and spin your wheels and search on the internet and prove all these things that you sense. You can begin from that place and move forward. You don't have to prove. You can. But you don't need to prove all these things because they're being demonstrated for you. That's the value of being here. We're already defining a new way of being that has yet to be completed. That's why we can't determine how this time in our history comes out. So, our time, the end of this cycle, it's got a lot of names. It's known as the shift of the ages, the end of time, the end of days. Some people are saying it's the end of the world. It's known as the end of a great cycle. The Mayans called it a great world age. And that's the term I'd like to use. I'm going to call this a great world age. What time do we begin? Because I know we started a few minutes late. What time was it? And what time do we finish? Approximately what? No, what time are we supposed to finish? Okay. I'm going to honor our time frame today as best, because we have a special treat at the end of this for you. A great world age. These are all different names that are being used to describe, and in the ancient literature, to describe this time in history. So whether you're looking from a spiritual or a religious or a mystical or an indigenous perspective, those names are all out there. We're living this time of extremes. I ask why. Now we have the language and the vocabulary that we can explain. Why now? Here's the reason why. Because you and I are living the end of a rare and precious 5,000-year-long cycle that happens to be the fifth of five such cycles that brings us to the end of a 26,000-year cycle that happens to be the time we align with a galactic core of the Milky Way galaxy. Other than that, there's not a thing going on. That's it. That's why the extremes are happening. All of the systems that we have built and put in place that cannot sustain themselves under the stress of a change of the end of a great world age are collapsing right now. It's not about the housing market. It's not about the value of the dollar. Those are symptoms. Those are byproducts of a system that's not sustainable. Our economic system's not sustainable. It's based on ever-expanding markets and one person making money because somebody else loses money. You can't sustain that over the long term. The way we fuel this planet, we fuel it from a finite source of fuel that destroys the very thing we cherish. That's not sustainable. Using war and more powerful weapons to get our idea and our point of view across or to solve our differences, that's not sustainable. All of those things are up. They're up for us right now, all in this little window of time. Isn't that cool? I was with some young people not long ago, and what they told me is cool is no longer the word. So they said it was sweet. And then they had another word, but I'm not going to use, so I'll stay with the sweet. But it's either cool or sweet. All those things are up for us right now. They're all happening right now. So what does it mean? What does all this mean? I have spent the bulk of my adult life looking for the answer so I can share this with you. And I put this slide together, I realized that my whole journey is chronicled by the length of my hair and the color of my hair all over the world. So we won't go into all the details here, but you can see we've gone through a lot of changes. And my journey has taken me to some of the most amazing places on this planet. Beautiful, beautiful monasteries in the highlands of central China, in Tibet. Very humble mud brick monasteries in the high deserts of Egypt near the Jordanian border. I've seen some of the most amazing temples in the world. I've met some of the most amazing people, and some of these, if you're with me tomorrow, we're going to go into more detail tomorrow about what we do. And I have to ask that you not photograph the slides, and I'll just tell you why. Because I'm going to get into some images from Tibet and from some of the indigenous elders. And what has happened in the past is when people share them on the World Wide Web, they go back to the countries and the governments, they recognize the people and the monasteries, and they make it really difficult for them. So I'm going to ask if you will help me to honor my promise not to share them. Are you okay if we do it that way? You all right with that? Okay, thanks. Some of the most amazing of the indigenous elders that have shared with us their secrets and their way of life and what they know that we've forgotten. So again, I'm going to go into more detail with these tomorrow. I'm not going to be able to do it today, but I want you to know that it's almost universal. It's like the great secret everybody knows except us. When you leave the borders of our country, their cultures, their history, their wisdom allows for this time in history to be the change. Western civilization missed the boat on that one. We're trying to go along like everything is business as usual, and nothing could be further from the truth. It cannot be. It cannot be business as usual because we're at the end of a cycle where the planet changes. And if you have any doubts, I'm going to show you a couple of charts from the ice cores in Antarctica in just a few minutes. From the ice cores in Antarctica, we can go into the history of this planet for 500,000 years in the past. And we can see what has happened to the Earth then and see what it means to where we are right now. You won't want to miss it. Stay tuned. So I've met some of the most amazing people. I've been to some of the most amazing places. The one that particularly I want to share with you, some have seen this, some have not. It was this particular monastery in Tibet. And it was with this particular man in the year 2001 is when I met the abbot of this monastery. And I asked this abbot about the teachings. I said, what is it that you have taught in this monastery? Each monastery is like a university. They have one thing that they teach over and they specialize in. So some monasteries teach psychic arts. Some monasteries teach martial arts. Some monasteries teach only healing techniques. Some monasteries preserve the wisdom of that culture. Can you imagine how much can you learn in a monastery in 1,500 years if all they do is teach you psychic abilities? Can you imagine that? So it was this abbot of this monastery, I'm meeting him here for the first time, and I asked him what this particular monastery had to say. What did they know about the change in our time in history right now? I asked him the question. I said, do you have a library, a secret library that preserves the wisdom of your teachings? And to make a long story really brief, the answer was yes. He said, yes, we have a library. And it was this little monk that he assigned to us, a young monk, to share with us this library. And I don't know if you can see this from the slide. He's got a big smile on his face. Can you see his cheekbones? He's smiling. They don't get a lot of company at this monastery. They don't get a lot of visitors. And he wanted to share with us what was there. So this little monk jumped on a bicycle and he rode 30 miles from where we were to another monastery to get the keys that my laser pointer won't show you. There's a laser there. He's got the keys in his hand. He rode 30 miles one way to get those keys and 30 miles back while we were waiting to see this library, but it was worth the wait. He opened the door and he took us in to this empty chanting hall. The only thing that was in there were the robes from the monks, just as they are when they leave them. Past these beautiful 30-foot tall Buddhas of compassion. Aren't they beautiful? They were lining the hall on either side. Past these beautiful 8-foot tall prayer wheels. Have you all seen these before? Inside the prayer wheels are hundreds and hundreds of feet of linen with the same prayer inked again and again and again. And the idea is that when you spin the prayer wheel, the prayer spins and goes out into the universe as long as the motion is going. And they took us past all of these into an absolutely dark room that looked just like that. That's my favorite dark room slide. And when the lights came on, what you see next is what we saw when we went in there. This is a library. It's 3 stories tall, but it's only about 12 feet wide. It's a tall, narrow library. It looks like this. So if you can see, this is my hand with a flashlight down at the bottom of the screen. And we're looking at the corner of a room. This is the corner of the room. Oh, here goes my abandonment issue. Oh, she'll be back. This is the corner of the room. We're looking up. These are Tibetan books. This is a Tibetan library. These books have been here for 1,500 years. They're loose pages all stacked up inside the wooden and the leather covers. And so I asked the monk that was there, I said, "What's in these books?" He giggled. They like to giggle a lot. He said, "Everything." And I said, "What do you mean everything?" He said, "We have a record of every spiritual tradition that's ever come through this part of the world." And he said, "We have a record of what you would call," and he was talking to me specifically, the early Christian and pre-Christian traditions before the church edited the texts. Those are the records that are here in this monastery. What do they have in here? If you could bring all this together and encapsulate it into a couple of brief sentences. What is this all about? It's what they call the great secret of our past. Now, when I've shared this with other scientists, they get all excited. They said, "All right, the great secret of our past. What is it?" It's an inner experience. And before I even get to the next word, you see a scientist's eyes just glaze over. They don't want to know about an inner experience. They want something they can capture and put into a case in a museum. That's not what's here. These people are preserving an inner experience that prepares us for outer changes. They're holding the secret of a way of being. A way of being. This is what they've been studying here for 1,500 years. This is why they're not concerned about the changes. Because the changes are out there, not inside of here. They have chosen a way of being inside of their bodies that allows them to deal with whatever happens in the world. Today, our own scientists now are verifying this way of being. It's called coherence. How many have heard of coherence before? If you've studied the traditions of many of the Buddhist meditations, if you've worked with the Institute of Heart Math, how many have heard of the Heart Math Institute? How many have never heard of Heart Math? Okay, good. You will in just a few moments. That way of being is called coherence. Here's what coherence is. Every moment of every day, your heart and your brain are having a conversation. They're talking to each other. It's a two-way conversation. Your heart sends a signal to your brain, and the quality of that signal tells your brain what to feed your body. It tells your brain whether or not to send anti-aging, life-affirming chemistry into your body or to send stress, high cortisol chemistry into your body. It tells your brain whether or not to bump up your immune response, to lower the threshold of your immune response. It's all about the signal from your heart to your brain. But here's where this gets really interesting. The signal that's triggered from your heart is the result of the way you feel, the feeling that you choose to have every moment of every day. That feeling is the trigger that tells your heart whether or not to send a life-affirming, a life-denying, or a fight-or-flight kind of experience to your brain so that your brain can respond to your body with doing that. Now, in longer programs, we can talk about this more. We have ways of measuring, science has developed ways of measuring conditions in the body that tell you about your coherence. If you can measure your respiration, your heart rate variability, your pulse transit time, you can tell whether or not you've got high or low coherence. I'm going to talk about this more tomorrow. But the bottom line, if you're not with me tomorrow, feelings that we call in the English language care, gratitude, appreciation. Sound familiar? Very spiritual qualities. Your mom probably told you to to have those feelings in your prayers before you go to bed at night. These are the qualities of heart-based emotion that send the optimum signals to your brain that affirm life in your body. If you were with Bruce Lipton a little while ago, you heard him talk about some of these. Why this would make a difference in your life. Well, this is important for the individual. It's important for you and me. Even if we weren't at 2012, even if it wasn't the end of a 5,000-year cycle, even if it wasn't the end of a 26,000-year cycle, this is a really good way to live. However, we are at the end of those cycles, and now our own scientists are showing us that appreciation, gratitude, and care for individuals translates into cooperation, healing, and peace in groups. This is important because we are a group on this planet, and we're going through a big change, and the mistakes that were made in the past were that our ancestors chose to fight one another rather than to cooperate, to create war rather than to create peace. And if we can find a way to transcend those choices, then I think that's the good news for our time in history. Does that little piece make sense? It's high level. It's really fast because I want to go somewhere with this. We'll talk more about the coherence tomorrow. But what it looks like is so interesting to me that our spiritual traditions have prepared us through the world changing out there through heart-based experiences in here. Almost universally, those ancient texts and traditions, the spiritual traditions that became the religions came along later, and they wrapped the rules and the dogma around these core physiological experiences that empower us in life. And this is what's happened. What brings us to the point where we are today. So what can we realistically expect? We're seeing all the frightening prophecies and predictions. What can we realistically expect over these next couple of years? I want to do this in two different ways, and then we're going to come back to why coherence is important. World age endings always, always, always bring global changes. And those global changes always trigger human changes. The world age endings always change climate, sea levels, the resources, the magnetic fields of the planet. And now entire cycles of war and peace and the rise and fall of civilizations are actually being linked to these. If you want to do something interesting, go back to the 5,000-year mark, 5,000 years ago, and look at the great civilizations that disappeared at that period of time. What you'll find is the great civilizations of the south. Corral, just outside of Lima, Peru, the oldest civilization in all the Americas. They were doing fine until they reached this point, and they disappeared. Right on the border between India and Pakistan, archaeological discoveries are revealing a highly advanced civilization. They had hot and cold running water. They had closed sewage system. They had advanced weapon systems. They collapsed 5,000 years ago, right at this point in the cycle. In Turkey, new archaeological sites, some of the oldest sites on the planet are in Turkey right now. 5,000 years ago, another one at 10,000 years ago. So these cycles have a huge impact on civilization, on planet Earth, and the way we live our lives. So what can we realistically expect? Well, the key is if you know how to read the cycles of the past, you know what to expect when those cycles repeat. That makes sense, doesn't it? Makes perfect sense. Nature gives us a way to do that, and it's called fractal time. Now, if you have the book, there's a lot of detail about this. If you don't have the book, what is important about fractal time is to understand the cycles. The cycles of time. I'm going to talk about cycles just for a minute. Because we live cycles within cycles within cycles. Each time a cycle begins, it begins with what is called a seed, S-E-E-D, a seed event that puts a pattern of energy into motion that will repeat again and again and again until that pattern changed. It works for your personal life as well as for our global life. The first time somebody lied to you and you were hurt, the first time you were betrayed in love, the first time you were violated as a confidence, your strong emotional response to that planted a seed. And that set into motion a pattern of energy that will repeat throughout your life again and again and again until something happens to change that pattern. globally. 1929 was a seed event for what? For global economic collapse. Would you agree with that? 1914, a seed event for global war. Those set into motion patterns of energy that will repeat again and again and again until something changes those patterns. Those are the seed events. So if I say seed, are you okay with that? Does that make sense? That's the seed event. Now, where this is useful, that's when the cycle begins. But each time a cycle ends, it opens a window of opportunity called a choice point. The term choice point was coined in 1958 by Princeton University physicist Hugh Everett III. Choice point is the little place where one cycle ends, the next cycle has yet to begin. That little window of opportunity is where our choices are more potent than ever. And this is important because you and I are about to live some big choice points, and I want to talk about them. It's not about 2012. If you look closely at the prophecies and the predictions, 2012 is when the new world begins with all the changes that have already happened. That means all those big changes have to occur when? Before 2012, between 2009, 2010, 2011. By the time 2012 gets here, it may be a non-event. All the big stuff, I think, is going to happen before then. I think we might be disappointed. I know people who are running their credit cards up to the max, thinking they're never going to have to pay them off because of 2012. But we got in last night. I don't watch a lot of TV, but I turned on my TV last night. There was a furniture commercial. Maybe you saw this commercial that said, I can go down to the furniture store right down the road from here. I can get an entire bedroom suite and not have to pay anything down and no interest until 2014, which means 2012 cannot be the end of the world. So there's your proof right there. No, the big stuff's got to happen before 2012. 2012 is the window. It's the birth. It's the emergence after everything has happened. That's when the new way of being begins, if we're to believe the Mayans and our indigenous ancestors from their perspective of what we're seeing. Each time the cycle ends, it opens a choice point where the pattern in the past can be changed. Now, that is important because of where we find ourselves today. What does it mean for 2012? 2012 specifically, when I was writing the book, Fractal Time, my first degree was as a geologist, so I'm looking at this from a geologic perspective. Every year, on the poles of the Earth, there's a new layer of ice that's deposited that captures dust particles, little bubbles of air. It tells you how much carbon dioxide, how much oxygen is in the air, little microscopic life, forms of life. They're all captured in those layers of ice, and they're deposited on the poles. In 1999, scientists of the world drilled to the bottom of Antarctica, and they captured 500,000 layers of ice. Each layer is 1 year of Earth's history. That means we can look back 500,000 years and see what was happening in the Earth then and know how the changes of today compare. Is it really so anomalous what we're living? Again, in longer programs, I can spend more time with this. But I wanted you to see, first of all, this is what an ice core looks like. Some people say, well, you know, what do you mean an ice core? That's an ice core. And it must be a lot of fun working with ice cores because the scientists are always smiling when they're doing it. I like that picture a lot. So this is the ice cores. From the ice core, we can determine the temperature of the past, the sea levels of the past, how strong was the sun's energy from the past, what was the magnetic field of the Earth doing in the past. All of that you can tell for 500,000 years. So are we really living in an anomalous time, and what can we realistically expect? This might be the most important chart you see here this weekend. And I know it looks like a whole lot of data, and I'm just going to make this real simple. The red lines that are going up and down, those zigzag, my laser's not going to work here. So the red up and down lines, that is the energy from the sun as it gets stronger and weaker over time. Zero is the present day. There's 10,000 years ago. There's 5,000 years ago. Here is today. And look at what you're seeing. Obviously, there are ups and downs throughout history. 10,000 years ago, the sun's energy took a sharp spike. It got really strong. Okay? 5,000 years ago, right on this mark, it took a sharp spike. Where is it? Well, I really want to point to this. It's not as big of a spike that was there. Today, we're right on that spike. And can you see the blue line right in here? That is the sea level rising or lowering. Because when the sun's energy gets strong, the temperatures heat up, and what happens to the ice on the poles? It melts, and where does that water go? Into the oceans, and the oceans begin to rise. 10,000 years ago, that was two cycles ago. The sun's energy took a big jump, and the sea levels began to rise a lot. 5,000 years ago, the sun's energy took another spike, not as much, and you can see it right there. The sea levels began to rise. Right now, we are right at the crest, at the peak of a spike in the sun's energy, and there are reasons that are driving this, so I could show you in longer programs, and the sea levels are rising here. So what does that mean? What does this mean for us? It says we appear to be right on track with the physical changes that always come at the end of a world age. Has the world changed a lot in the last 120 years? You bet. But if you compare it to the big picture, those changes brought us into alignment with where we always are at the end of the change. Am I saying that okay? So it means that Earth is going through a change, but it's the change we always go through when we get to this point in the cycle. Now, I have to be really clear about this. So people say, what about global warming? Anybody wonder about global warming? That's a whole workshop. No, I want to be really clear about this. The global warming would happen whether we were here or not. Okay? And just to help you understand that, it's happening on other planets as well. It's not just Earth that's undergoing warming. Mars, temperatures are increasing. Venus, temperature increasing. All of those things. Have we contributed to global warming? The evidence suggests strongly that we have probably contributed and accelerated global warming. But if there were no cars, there's no cars on the moon, there's no cars on Mars, and it's still happening. So it just happens that our civilization has peaked with the kind of technology that's contributing global warming just at the time when the warming was happening anyway. It's probably no accident. Questions about that? So I want to be really clear. We definitely need to get off fossil fuels. We definitely need to lower our CO2 emissions. We definitely need to find green, sustainable ways to live our lives. Did we break the Earth? No. Okay? We appear to be on track for the physical changes that always come with the end of a world age. Our ancestors lived through these changes. I am less concerned about this. I'm more concerned about what comes next. The challenge is how we deal with the personal, social, cultural changes that come at the end of the world age. How do we treat one another as we go through these shifts? Do we work together and cooperate as a family? Or do we fight one another and make the mistakes of our ancestors? That's the question you and I are asking now. You're answering the question by the way you vote, by your political choices, by the technologies that we choose, and the way we're choosing to live our lives. That's our answer to this question right here. Now, this is where it gets really interesting. Historic data shows that those changes are intense. And I'm not saying it's all easy. I mean, we're obviously going through some big changes right now. It's intense, but look at this. Those changes are brief. They don't last generation after generation after generation. So here's where I'm coming from on this. My sense is this, and I think it's no accident it's happening this way. You and I are going through the greatest challenges of 5,000 years of recorded human history, bar none. The experts are telling us, our ancestors are telling us, we've got to make some choices right now. My sense is that what will probably happen is that the physical changes of the planet will drive us to work together and cooperate as a family because we need to get through the changes. And you and I are the vote that tips the scale and makes that happen. But after we go through the world age shift and those changes aren't so intense, my sense is that we'll find that we like working together because we're better people. We have a better world when we do so. And we'll continue to cooperate even after the 2012 shift because the changes drove us to do that. And in that way, we will have fulfilled the prophecies that say our world is a very different world after 2012. And I think that's where we're going to go. Do you think that's possible? You think that's where we're going with this? I think we're going to find it. I want to tell you, thank you. I know Bruce has found this. Bruce, those of you that have traveled outside the United States, the last 5 years, I've been on every continent of the earth, except Antarctica. I haven't been there yet. And what I can tell you is this. The people of this world, we are good. We're good together. We're a family. We're tight. We're good. I don't know if we all like each other, but I think we genuinely care about one another. And there's a handful of people in positions of power in government and corporations, and I'm going to say this really carefully, they are struggling to reconcile the changes that are happening so fast today with a world that they'd learned to live in the last 100, 150 years. They're struggling to reconcile that, but it's just a handful of people. What would happen if all the leaders went away? What would happen to our planet, do you think? You think so? I don't know. It was just a rhetorical question. I don't know. Okay. So the changes are brief. Our opportunity is what I just said. Will we choose cooperation or competition? Okay. Are you all right with where we are so far? Does this make sense? Let me tell you why it's important. We're about to find out whether or not we choose cooperation or competition, because we are about to live the close of some of the great cycles that defined our lives in the 20th century. Those cycles are coming about again before 2012, and we're going to have to make some choices. And that's where I want to go with this today. Global choice points. Big global choice points. Where are they? Don't you want to know where those choice points are? I sure did. When I began learning about cycles, I said, okay, the cycles are there. Where are they? And what do we do about them? When I was writing the book Fractal Time, I wanted to share with my readers, my audience, that the cycles of time follow the same rhythms and the same laws that govern much of the universe, that govern the orbits of planets or around stars and suns and moons, that govern much of the way our physical world works. Those same laws govern the cycles. But I'll tell you what I found out really fast is a lot of people don't like numbers in their books. They don't want to know. They don't want to see math in the book. So I moved it all to the appendices. And then I found out some people don't want to see math even in the appendices. So I moved it out of the appendices. And I automated on our website a way to determine where these cycles are. Some of you have seen that automation. Some haven't. I created what's called the time code calculator. I always think I should have some music when I say that. The time code calculator, what it is, it's a very, very simple calculator that allows us to use one of three different modes to find personal cycles of love and success, or hurt and disappointment and loss, or global cycles of war and peace and economic cycles. It all works the same principles using one of these three different modes. If you're looking at personal cycles, you use mode number three. I won't do those in here today. But I'm going to use mode number one right here to answer the question of what we can expect over these next couple of years. Mode number one answers the question, when can we expect the conditions of the past to happen again? In other words, if we find a seed date from the past and we plug it in, it'll tell us when that seed cycle comes around again and again and again. You okay with that? Does that make sense? We good with that? I'm just checking in because it won't make sense to you if somebody's stuck right now. It won't make sense. So let's do this. Let's use mode number one, and we're going to use mode number one to find some of the trigger dates from our past. So let's look at these. Would you agree that 1929 was the seed date for global economic collapse in this country and ultimately the world? So 1929 is a seed date. When does that 1929 cycle happen again? I'll give you a clue. It's not 2012. So let's go back. Here's our little calculator. We're going to plug in mode number one right there, mode number one. The cycle is this world age cycle, 5,125 years. The seed that we're looking at is 1929. And what we're going to find is the next fractal repeat of 1929 that hasn't happened yet, the next one in our future. So I need you all to put your index finger up in the air and push that go button. Okay, here we go. Ready? One, two, three. Three, go. Okay. It's not 2012. And this is in the book if you don't want to take notes here. It's not 2012. It's coming up in the next 12 to 18 months. In the book, there are actually specific months in there. The fractal 2012. Now, here's what this means. It means the conditions of the seed that were planted in 1929 next repeat in 2010. The conditions doesn't mean that the economic cycle must collapse. It means the conditions are ripe for that kind of a collapse. So that's an opportunity for us to take a little extra care, a little sensitivity, and make some good choices. Okay? You're going to see some good news happening here in just a minute, because this stuff looks scary right now. What was the first date history will show that the United States of America was surprised and attacked on our own soil? The first date. On what year? 1941. Exactly. That was a seed date for surprise and attack on American soil. By the way, if you've read the book, you know that the time code calculator, mode number one, 5,125 year cycle, the seed 1941, September 11th, 2001, is exactly on the cycle. It falls exactly on the cycle. And if we'd known that, I don't know that we could have known what would happen, but we may have been able to do things a little differently. I don't know. I just think it's so interesting. It was exactly on that cycle. So after September 11th, 2001, the next fractal that we're looking at, press go, 1, 2, 3, ready? 1, 2, 3, go. What is the next year? Oh, it's not 2012, 2010. What would you say is the seed date for the first time we had global war on a large scale in modern times? Yeah, it was 1914. Is when historians, I mean, there are a lot of dates that led up to it, but the World War I usually is said to have begun in 1914. When does that cycle repeat? Okay? It's a trick question because it's not 2010. So mode number one, 5,125 years. Our seed now is 1914. We'll press go. It's 2011. Now, it doesn't mean these things have to happen, but these are trigger dates. Look at what we're seeing. Economic collapse, if that were to repeat in 2010, that would weaken the economies of the world. I can see where other things could possibly follow that, but none of that has to happen. Here's why I wanted to put these. You can pick any dates. By the way, if you do this at home, on the website, and your own, I'll just caution you, you'll stay up late nights into the wee hours of the morning, picking dates from your past, of your past romance, and the time you made your first good salary, and the time you lost your first job, and the first time somebody went out on you in a marriage or a relationship or lied to you. I mean, you'll lose some sleep over this. So, but it's not all about bad things. And in the book, there are a lot of, you can find the good cycles as well. But good cycles, rarely, we just don't get stuck in patterns of joy. And good, they're not a problem for us. So, these dates, these are some of the most frightening events that defined the 20th and now 21st century in the world as we know it. These dates are repeating in the next 12 to 18 months. What that means, because they are seed dates and they're repeating, every one of those repeat dates is also what? Exactly. It's a choice point. It's a choice point. You and I in the next 12 to 18 months are going to live a rare, precious opportunity on the 5,000-year history of our planet. We are going to be at the choice point for some of the most frightening events of our past. And here's what I think is going to happen. I think this generation, you and I, people that think like us all over the world and feel the way we feel all over the world, are about to make the choices that will allow us to forever walk away from the kind of economy that can collapse and devastate so many people in a few hours like we've had in the past. I think we're about to walk away from the use of war as our first response to answer the differences that arise between nations. I think we are the generation that's going to walk away from these things and redefine them forever. And it's not going to happen sometime way down the road, way off in the future. You're living the events now that are laying the foundation for where these choices are going to be coming from. How do you feel about that? You think it's possible that we could see that kind of change in this world in the next 12 to 18 months? Do you? You're the one that's going to choose it. You're going to choose it. All right. So how do we choose? This is why I wanted to get to the point where we are here today. How do we choose? One of the most frightening events of our past tipped off scientists of the language that it takes to make the choice. Right now, there's a couple of satellites. There's one in the northern hemisphere. There's one in the southern hemisphere. Whose sole mission it is to send back readings telling us how strong the magnetic fields of this planet are. Every 30 minutes, they send back some data. One of the satellites is the red line. One is the blue line. This is the magnetic field of the Earth. This is important because every form of life is linked through this magnetic field. Every blade of grass, every amoeba, every hamster, every goldfish, all dogs and cats, the leaders of all corporations, the leaders of every nation are part of this field that's being measured right here. Okay? Every day the data is coming back. It ebbs and flows throughout the day, and you can see that. One day, scientists were looking at this, and all of a sudden it was ebbing and flowing, and then there's a big spike you can see right there. And scientists said, wow, what on earth is going on? What on earth, what in the world is going on that could affect the very fields of the earth that sustain all life and connect all life on this planet? They overlaid it onto a calendar, and lo and behold, you probably know what this was. It was the month of September. The date was the 11th, and the year was 2001, 9/11. And the scientists are saying, what would 9/11 have to do with the magnetic fields of the Earth that connect all life? Well, this event is what tipped off the scientists to how powerful you are. And this is what Bruce talks about. You are such powerful beings if you choose to claim that power. Every one of you and me, we're all in this together, we have a vote. We have a vote in terms of how we tip the scales of this moment in history. And this data tells us where that vote comes from. Here's what they found. Look at this. That spike happened at 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, 15 minutes after the first plane hit the first tower. It took about 15 minutes for the data to make it in the media and circle the world. And the emotional outpouring, the emotional response of millions or possibly billions of humans in response to what happened was so strong that it affected the magnetic fields of the Earth. You say, how? It's because your heart creates the strongest magnetic field in your body. It's a biomagnetic field. And when you feel the feelings of care and deep emotion, and this was untrained. This was a spontaneous emotional release. What it told our scientists is that collectively we are part, not separate from, part of the very fields of this earth that sustain all life to such a degree that the fields of the earth that connect everything are registering this. And the satellites, listen to this, the satellites are 22,000 miles above the surface of the planet. And they're picking this up. And the scientists said, oh my God. And that has led to a series of studies. The studies now have confirmed all life bar none, every leader of every nation, all presidents, all employees of all corporations, every human, all life is connected through these magnetic fields. This isn't a quantum field. This is a field we can measure with conventional equipment. The quantum field is there to an even greater degree, but this we know for certain. There's no doubt. There's no guessing. Scientific fact, everything is connected through these fields beyond any reasonable doubt. We are part of the fields that triggered the change. That led to a scientific hypothesis that strong collective emotion has a measurable impact on the field of this earth. If we create the right feelings, those are the feelings that are preserved by the indigenous wisdom of our past. And our most cherished spiritual traditions. This is what they were trying to tell us. 5,000 years ago, this planet went through a world age change. Our ancestors lived through it. And immediately they began to write to you and me. And they said, wow, this thing just happened. I'm paraphrasing. They said that when I wrote the Bible, I didn't know so many people would read it. So I'm just teasing. They began to write to us. They dedicated entire texts, entire temples, inner experiences that became spiritual traditions that had religions wrapped around them to separate us from ourselves. Go past the rules. Go past the dogma. Go past the interpretations and go right to the root of those teachings. How many of you believe in reincarnation in this room? Anybody? Oh, well. Okay, so when I say our ancestors of the past, who may I be talking about? Is it possible that a long time ago, you and I lived through a great world age shift and we said, note to self. And we left things for ourselves then that we thought we might recognize now that would trigger in us now the memory of a way of being that we knew then that would help us get through what we're going through now. Is that possible? Okay, so maybe you're the choir and we're talking to the choir. Maybe that's exactly what's happening. They began leaving us the information, the clues, the keys to an inner experience that would help us navigate these great changes in our outer world. Our own science is just now catching up with that. The Institute of Heart Math, H-E-A-R-T, capital M-A-T-H, all one word, a pioneer research organization based in Northern California, exploring the power of the human heart to go way beyond pumping blood in your bodies. Those of you that are affiliated with HeartMath, you know the work they've done. If you are not, what I want to share with you is that HeartMath is now pioneering the first of its kind science-based initiative to make use of this data from 9/11. They are pioneering a science-based initiative that is called the Global Coherence Initiative. Remember, coherence is a good thing, personally. If we can create a lot of coherence collectively, everyone benefits because we're all part of the field. If we can create 300 or 400 people in this room, if we can create coherence in here, the effects of our coherence extends beyond the walls of this room because it's part of the field. Does that make sense? It's being measured. All right, the Global Coherence Initiative. Here is the stated goal of this initiative, quote, to unite millions of people from varied beliefs, cultures, backgrounds, across borders, across traditions, across ideologies, to shift global consciousness from instability to balance and cooperation. That is the goal of a science-based, privately funded initiative. Now, it's a two-phase project. One phase is building sensors all over the earth that are measuring these fields in a way that they've never been done before. And I've got to tell you, the military's really interested because never has a sensor been built and deployed for this reason. They've always used it for other applications. So that's the first phase. It's happening right now. The second phase is individuals can be taught, we can learn and teach and share the techniques that create coherence. We're going to do this in here tomorrow, or wherever we are tomorrow. If you're with me tomorrow, we're going to go into the native traditions, the indigenous traditions. What were they showing? I'm going to show you some brain scans that are absolutely amazing. We're going to learn some techniques that help create this coherence. But this now has been refined to the first of its kind science-based initiative because coherence can be measured at 0.10 hertz between your heart and your brain. So the first time we now have the technology to tell us when we're feeling the feelings that create that coherence. We've never had that before. We've guessed, and I think it's all good, but now we know for sure. So that's all I'm going to be able to say about this today, but if you're interested in this project, if you'd like to become a member of a community, you can be a passive member and just watch. You can become part of a global team. There's no cost. Part of a global team that is working to create this coherence. You can learn it and teach it to others if you'd like that. You can explore and teach young people with the tools and the techniques to know when they're feeling those feelings. If you'd like to know any more about that, there's a place on our website, gregbraden.com. It says the world is changing. The world's in crisis and you can help. That's the button. The world's in crisis. You can help. Click on that and you'll have all the information you need. I just want you to know that something is being done and that this technology links us to our most cherished spiritual traditions because it's all about an inner way of being that influences the world around us. Now, here's why this is important. When we create coherence in this field, The science is showing we become more peaceful. We're less aggressive. We're more cooperative. We're more willing to solve problems and work together than fight one another and grab the last vestiges of the resources for a world that's changing faster than we can document it in our textbooks or teach it in our classrooms. And that's a good thing. A relatively few number of people can create the coherence, and a planet benefits from it. And I think it's no accident that it's happening right now. It's no accident that right now, faced with the greatest number of challenges of 5,000 years of human history that pose the greatest threats to our existence, that we're learning the language that speaks to our bodies and the earth at the same time. Do you think that's an accident? Can't be an accident. Just think about that. And this is where we are right now. You've all come to this conference, and you're seeing some amazing speakers, and they're all talking to you about a way of being, about something in here dealing with your personal life. But it's all happening within the context of this moment in time, helping you to redefine who you are and come to terms with the changes in your world. I think it cannot be an accident that we're learning this now. We're learning the language that speaks to our bodies and the earth. So, well, I can say to you right now, I don't know what's going to happen over these next few years. But I do know whatever happens, it's going to happen between you and me and our family. I know that we were born speaking the language that communicates with the very fields that are undergoing the change. And our ancestors tried desperately to convey a message to us immediately at the end of the last shift so that we could get through the next one. And we've preserved that message for 5,000 years. Right now, what I can say to you is the stage is set. The future's waiting. The choice is ours. And when do you think the time would be? Now is the time. This is going to bring to a close this portion of my program. It's the end of what I'm going to say, but it's the beginning of everything that comes next. Now, I went through this very, very quickly, a very high level, and I want to ask, does the 2012 alignment, does it make a little more sense to you after what we did in here? Does that help? Can you see how it's impossible for us to passively go through this time in history? We're all having feelings, and our feelings are contributing this field. What is it that we're feeling, and is that really what you want to say to the field? What are you saying to the field right now? Is it what you want to say? It's all about choice. And to bring the program to a close today, a lot of this is kind of left brain. Some of it was some data that I know people like to see. We want to do something a little bit more right brain. I'm supposed to be finished around 4-ish, right? We started a few minutes late. In 15 minutes? Okay, so we have one last thing. We started late. We started late, and I've got 90 minutes, and I'm going to go, and I'm going to honor you all with our 90 minutes. You okay with that? So what we have today, and this will be the last thing we're going to do. It's a 6-minute piece. Okay, and we're going to do the book signing outside. Nobody told us this, so. Okay, so what we have today, first I want to thank you. You've been a really beautiful audience. Some of you have heard this before. Some of you have never heard it before. It's all about choice, and to help really anchor that with us a little bit different way, I've asked Sean Galloway has created a beautiful film that normally I share as a DVD. He's here to actually perform it live while you see the images. These are very powerful images you're going to see juxtapositioned with one another. Some are easy to see, some are not so easy to see, but every time you see two images, we're reminded that we've got a choice in terms of which path we take. Sean, I want to thank you for the work you're doing, and if you can ask this gentleman up here to cue us up, bring his audio up, and let's help me give a warm welcome for Sean Galloway up on the stage right here. Thank you.
And thank you to Greg Braden. Isn't he awesome? This is called I Choose Love. can see tears. I see a choice, love or fear. So what do you choose? I can see peace, or I can see war. I can see sunshine, or I can see a storm. choose love. I choose love. I choose love. I choose love. So thank you, Greg Braden. Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Barry Goldstein. Thank you very much, everyone. Well,
thank you, Sean. Thank you, Barry. Yeah. Thank you all. Okay, so they've moved the book signing. It's no longer in here. It's going to be out and down the hall. And I'll meet you all out there. Please don't come and ask me anything so I can get down there with you. Oh, down this way. Okay, go out, turn to the right. Thank you. Bye-bye.